Officials in the United States have confirmed that North Korea's claim to have successfully launched its first intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, is correct. The U.S. Pacific Command says the missile flew longer than any North Korean missile test conducted by the rogue regime so far, suggesting Pyongyang may now have the capacity to strike as far away as Alaska or even Darwin. Meanwhile, Russia and China both have warned that tensions with Pyongyang could lead to catastrophic developments and have simultaneously agreed to suspend Pyongyang's missile activity. They have also called on the US and South Korea to stop their large-scale military exercises in Northeast Asia. Joseph Cirincione is the president of the Plowshares Fund, which is focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Joseph Cirincione, welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So the Pentagon has confirmed this was an ICBM as claimed by North Korea. No doubt about that now.
No doubt. Independent experts are unanimous. This was an ICBM launch at a very high, lofted trajectory, went almost straight up and came straight down, traveled about 930 kilometers. But if you flatten that trajectory out, this could hit Singapore, Australia, or Alaska.
Okay. How much of a game changer is that fact alone?
This is a major milestone in the North Korean program. They've been trying to do this for quite some time. They have stepped up their testing, both of nuclear weapons and of missile tests. They have more planned. We don't even know if this is the maximum range of this missile. This is just the test range that they launched it at. They have at least two other prototypes for other kinds of ICBMs. So I would expect to see this testing continuing. If it continues unabated, if we just continue the U.S. policy of basically ignoring this and hoping it goes away or trying to outsource it to China, I think North Korea will have a true ICBM, one that can hit New York or Washington before the end of Donald Trump's first term.
I'll come to the role of China and others in this in a moment, but is it fair to say that this has occurred, this capacity from North Korea, more quickly than countries like US and China were thinking? And the only concern now is how and when North Korea can miniaturize a nuclear weapon sufficiently to fit it onto the missile. That's the major threat.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, they had a fairly slow pace to their missile program. In fact, starting in 1998, the U.S. convinced them to put a moratorium on their missile test. They didn't test for 8 years. Then when the Bush administration pulled the plugs on the deal with North Korea that stopped the nuclear program and the moratorium on the missile program, they started testing again, built a brand new test range, a new test facility. And under Kim Jong-un, the pace has gone to a rapid pace. They are testing about every 3 weeks now, one kind of missile or another. They've done more tests under Kim Jong-un than they've done in the entire history of North Korea. So yes, they picked up the pace, and I don't think our policy has kept pace. It caught us a bit by surprise. Donald Trump has just been continuing the failed policies of the Obama administration, which were basically to ignore the problem and hope it goes away.
But in a sense, the failed policies of the Obama administration come after the failed policies of previous administrations and the six-party talks, which failed too. We've talked about those in the past. So Donald Trump saying this era of strategic patience is over. What is the alternative? That seems to be what's beggaring everybody here.
Let me differ just a little with your premise. I think the only thing that has stopped North Korea has been negotiations. Remember, the deal that we got in 1994 stopped their plutonium program. They stopped it in its tracks. We found out they were cheating in 2003, but instead of fixing that violation, the Bush administration pulled the plug and walked away from the whole deal. That's what started everything unravel. That's what got us to the point we are here. So what can you do about it? One, you could take military action, but even a limited military action is likely to ignite a conflict unlike anything the world has seen since the First Korean War.
Yeah.
So that is basically
off the table.
So we can't do
that.
Basically not. Basically, you can't. The risk is that in kind of blustering around the edges, moving warships into the area, doing overflights of bombers, threatening a military, there might be a miscalculation that could trigger a war that no one really wants. The second thing you could do is try the outside game. Try to increase pressure. Try to increase sanctions. UN will almost certainly put new sanctions on, but that'll take weeks. The U.S. could slap secondary sanctions on Chinese banks or other people doing business with North Korea. That could have some effect, although it's going to alienate China, and it's unlikely to bring the kind of pressure that would force North Korea to stop its program. So you're left with the only other option which is to have negotiations, which is what China and Russia and South Korea and Japan are calling for. If it's no guarantee that those talks will succeed, but it's pretty much a guarantee that the current course will fail.
You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 18 minutes to 8. Our guest is Joseph Cirincione, president of the Ploughshares Fund, focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution, which is what we're talking about at the moment, how to resolve this conflict. The US president issued a tweet saying China must put a heavy move on North Korea. We don't know what that means. But just hours later, President Xi Jinping, who is in Moscow having talks with Vladimir Putin, released a joint statement condemning North Korea's missile testing and activity, but also proposing a plan, a way forward, which is talks that coincides with the US and South Korea halting their joint exercises on the peninsula. Now, I was in China recently, and in all of the foreign policy discussions we had over there, this was a proposal the Chinese kept putting forward, that in order for North Korea to feel confident and secure enough to drop its missile program, it would have to have a sign from America, and that sign would have to be nothing short of the US-South Korean joint exercises stopping. What do you think of the likelihood of this or the value of this?
Well, that is the deal that is achievable. You could probably get that. A stop of all North Korean tests in place in exchange for a stop of North Korean to a South Korean and U.S. military exercises. We know this because the North Koreans themselves have said this, which is why you hear the South Koreans, the Japanese, the Chinese talking about this. The problem is that South Korea and the United States are very reluctant to do that. It's apples and oranges, they say. It's nuclear versus conventional. We have a legitimate right to do these exercises. North Korea is illegitimate, et cetera. But somewhere in there, you may be able to get the deal. A reduction in the exercise, a dropping of certain aspects of the exercises. For example, we practice decapitation strikes against the North Korean regime. Dropping that might be a security assurances, certain pledges or words or other steps the U.S. could take towards North Korea. The whole point is to get to a table and start discussing these things, and then we'll see what's possible.
Yes, but that's a big ask for South Korea in particular, who would be feeling particularly vulnerable.
The South Koreans are suggesting it. President Moon Jae-in was just in the United States, and he wants a strong stand against North Korea, but with this end goal in mind.
And the response from the U.S. to that, have we had a response yet, Joe, to that from the U.S.?
No, we have not. We've had tweets from the president which have set red lines that the North Koreans have now crossed that have talked about China taking care of the problem. The U.S. doesn't have a clear policy, and partially that's because we don't have the people in place to deal with this policy, to craft the policy, to implement. There is no U.S. ambassador to South Korea. There is no assistant secretary of state for East Asia or assistant secretary of defense. The people who would be doing this haven't been put in place by the Trump administration, so we have a ghost ship at state trying to handle this. The people you would normally think would now be coming up with plans aren't even in the building.
Delicate times. Joseph Cirincione, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph Cirincione is the president of the Ploughshares Fund, focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. You're listening to RM Breakfast.